We're at the Granley Bakken Resort for the Keystone Symposium, one of the series in the Keystone Symposia. This is the meeting on new insights into health span and diseases of aging, from molecular to functional senescence, and we're with Danica Chen from UC Berkeley. I was just commenting on the unusual name of your department, which is Nutritional Science and Toxicology. How did you get it? How did we get into that department? What's going on?
Yeah, it's a long story, and I will try to make it as short as possible. So Berkeley, I was actually a student at Berkeley. I was in molecular and cell biology. And when I was there, I didn't know what nutritional science department was doing and what the focus is. But then after I did my postdoc with Lenny Garante, working on aging, and when I was looking for a faculty position, and I got an invitation letter from that department, and they're recruiting a aging person. And it turns out that department is not really working on traditional nutritional science. So the department started a long time ago, and the focus was nutritional science. But right now, the focus is actually metabolism. Mm-hmm. So they still keep the same name, but the focus is not really nutritional science, but rather metabolism. So if you go to our department website, so it says the home of metabolism. So, and I thought it's really a right fit for me. When I was in Lenny's lab, I was studying how sirtuins regulate metabolism. So I thought it's a great place for me. And I've been there for more than a year, and I'm very glad with my decision. The projects on metabolism are going very well just because of the support of the department.
So what are you working on specifically?
I work on how sirtuins regulate aging and diseases of aging. So one main focus is metabolism.
Right. So using model organism?
Using mouse,
right. So, and you did a postdoc with Lenny at MIT?
Right.
Okay. The connection here to me seems the right one, in the sense that I don't see how you can talk about aging without talking about diet, nutrition, metabolism.
Sure.
So in fact, this is actually a good connection.
Yes. Have
you noticed at this meeting that there's more of a combination of forces being joined together here in terms of people being less in their silos and collaborating more?
Yes, I really think the organizers did a great job putting together this meeting. Has people with diverse expertise and have very different perspectives on aging. So I really feel like I learned a lot, and lots of people are interested in what I'm doing just because I'm different, and also I'm also interested in what they are doing because I find this just a way to expand my research.
Okay, so what precisely, because I know what Lenny's been, we had a conversation yesterday about the work he's doing, and the notion of SIRT1 as being this switch as well, and so on and so forth. So, what's the focus of your work here? Where exactly are you going with this?
One focus is, I've been continuing with what I have been doing, which is sirtuins and metabolism. Of course, we're not restricted just to metabolism because we know aging is such a broad concept. As you just mentioned, right? So people are really from different areas are all here and talk about aging. We are not really restricted to one area or what I can do, but rather to think about the most important questions in aging. And then we can collaborate with people with different expertise and then solve the most important questions in aging. So when I came to this meeting and in the past few days, just hearing about what people have been doing and, we just come up with ideas. For example, we can look at protein folding, and maybe sirtuins may also be regulating protein folding. That's just an example. Because the sirtuins, and I think, if it's a longevity gene, So we must have the capacity to regulate very diverse pathways that are related to aging. So I think it's not a good idea to restrict the way we think about what sirtuin can do, but rather be very open-minded and try out something very different.
Okay. So how did you, I'm just curious, how did you get into this science in the first place? It was the...
Science in aging or
science? As a career, what was the...
I think mostly family influence. My parents, they are retired now, but they, long time ago, they were engineers.
Right.
So I think I just grew up and just always interested in science, and I always do well in school in science. So
did
I think
you grow up in this country?
No, I grew up in China.
Okay, so there's a huge explosion at the moment in China, of course, in terms of the amount of research going mm-hmm. on and stem cell work and so on and mm-hmm. so forth. So, and you then went to UC Berkeley?
Right. I went there for grad school before I went to Lenny's lab.
Right. And where did you do your undergraduate work?
In China as well.
Okay. Is there a big difference in the milieu of laboratories in China and here?
Very different.
How would you describe, how would you characterize it?
Well, you know, maybe my comparison is not 100% fair, because when I left China, that was over a decade ago. Maybe it's very different now. And also, when I was there, I was an undergrad, so maybe right. I didn't really have a very good perspective. But I think at least the type of problems we were trying to solve back then in China was more of, more practical, because the country at the time couldn't really afford lots of money to solve problems in basic science. They wanted to solve more practical problems.
Translation.
Yeah, exactly. But from what I know, it's very different now. The government is very encouraging lots of scientists to really do cutting-edge research. And I think in coming years, research in China is going to be really fast-growing.
So in terms of the people at this meeting and the connection between translational and basic bench research,
mm-hmm.
Obviously this is a subject that gets on the front pages of lots of magazines.
Sure.
People are sitting at home saying, well, what should I do? How should I, what should my diet be like, and so on. You're in a department of nutritional science and mm-hmm. toxicology. So do you find yourself being asked to give prescriptions about how people should, how they should eat, and what, if so, what do you say?
I mean, I think a calorie restriction, for example, is definitely the miracle of aging, in terms of aging. But, you know, I definitely don't, you know, tell people you should calorie restrict yourself, eating healthy, exercise more. That's what I would recommend. Yeah, people do ask me that type of questions. But, you know, stick to the healthy diet. And you know, I was like, you know, just follow up our research. And I think it's definitely something very promising that there are possibly small molecules out there that will soon will know the answer, whether these molecules will really transform our life.
The calorie restriction story, though, it's still controversial in terms of humans, right?
Yes.
I mean, there's good evidence in rodents, there's good evidence in other model organisms, but it's mm-hmm. not clear
mm-hmm.
But this is your area, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is something you work in.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your sense at the moment in terms of whether this will translate from model organisms like mouse and so on up mm-hmm. into humans?
This is my speculation. Of course, we are waiting to see the data. But I think if it's such a thing that is conserved from yeast to primates, possibly, I would seriously doubt that it's not going to work in human.
Mm-hmm.
And there are evidence out there that we don't have the data on lifespan, but it definitely improved the health of humans. So I think it's definitely very promising. But another question is, well, do you want people to do calorie restriction? I said, maybe not. I mean, you probably don't really want to sacrifice the quality of life.
So do you go back to China to sort of look at this, what's going on in science there?
Yes, I just went there 1 month ago.
Is there much interest in aging research in China?
So I didn't really, so for that trip, it's more of a personal trip. So I didn't really went there and interact with scientists. But I did went to, so my family lives in Shanghai. So I went 10 years ago. I'm not sure if you know much about Shanghai. So the main city, Shanghai, was in the, there's one river.
Yeah.
A very famous river in Shanghai. It was the west part of the river was the main Shanghai. The east part of that river, 10 years ago, it was a countryside. Nothing was going on there. But right now, it's more developed than Manhattan.
Whoa.
Yes. And there's also the area, it's only for science technology development. Lots of companies are going on, and some of my friends got education here and then went back to China and started their companies there. So it's a really fast-growing science and technology is really growing fast there.
Okay, but in terms of personal lifestyle, personal habits, and so on, is there still a lot of smoking in China?
Yes.
Okay. So, do people still eat? Do people have sugary drinks?
Yes.
Which we still do here, obviously. Uh-huh. There's a lot of obese people in the United uh-huh. States. But I'm just trying to see because I have never been to China, so uh-huh. I'm rather interested in knowing whether the kind of movement we're seeing in aging research here is likely to, you think, extend itself into China. Whether that's going to start happening now. Whether in fact there will be any kind of interventions made about smoking, sweet drinks, and so on and so forth.
Yes, I think in general they still smoke a lot, but I don't know how that can be changed quickly. I don't know how long it takes this country to realize smoking is really bad and we should stop smoking.
Oh, it took 30 or 40 years.
Yeah, exactly. But in China, though, it's almost a social thing. I remember my brother didn't smoke at all, but then once he had a job and started, being part, it's just a pick up smoking because it's almost a requirement to socialize with people. So I think that's a culture thing. I don't know how long it will take to change that. But I definitely think it's a bad, and it's not something I can
change. Yeah, it's not so much that. I was thinking about the overall landscape in terms of aging research and mm-hmm. whether that's taken off yet. I mean, so, we have the Buck Institute, we have the Glenn Foundation, mm-hmm. a lot of these organizations devoted specifically to funding or conducting research into aging. Mm-hmm. Is there something equivalent there, or has most of the energy gone into areas like stem cells at this point? I just don't know. I'm
yes.
just asking for...
I know stem cells is a big interest there. In terms of aging research, I haven't really heard much. Yeah, I think probably, someone like me who knows China and who knows what's going on here should really go back and really, bring their attention to aging research. I think.
That's what I was thinking. If you are going back and forth, I'm just curious to know what the landscape is like and whether, in fact, Your kind of information and knowledge now is something that should be re-exported, as it were. So I have no idea.
Yeah, it is something that I hope one day I can really I can do, and I think it's good for China, and I guess it's a one way for me to give back to China for all the education China gave me.
Yeah, so science in general in China is regarded with you know, is thought up highly in China? Or is it? Are we thinking about more practical technology? You said your parents were engineers, for example. Mm-hmm. So.
As of now, I'm not sure. I know it's changing, and they are focusing on. Well, they start to pay attention to basic science now, and so I think it's changing too fast. It's really hard to comment on that.
Mm, yeah. Okay. So, in terms of your field here now, what you're working in, what do you think are the most likely prospects ahead for the Sirtuins? I mean, obviously, we know that there's a company, the Sirtris, mm-hmm. David Sinclair, working mm-hmm. on stuff. We read the stories about resveratrol and so on and so forth. Do you think there's a major pharmacological prospect here in terms of drugs that will allow people to prolong their lives without having to go through calorie restriction and the strictures of dietary restriction and so on?
Yes, I think, you know, from David's work and also Sutra's work, and, you know, they have both presented in this meeting. And I think that looks very promising. And this is just, you know, focusing on one gene, one sirtuin gene, Sirt1. And I'm also working on other sirtuins. So there are seven.
Because there are seven, right?
There are seven. At this moment, my hunch is that other sirtuins may have a very different role from Sirt1 in aging. Mm-hmm. And I think what David has done on Sirt1 sort of set a very good example, and it's very encouraging for people in the Sirtuin field to say, you know, if we can really understand what other Sirtuins do, and maybe we can really also target this other six Sirtuins and do something great to human health. So I'm very hopeful.
When you were a little girl mm-hmm. in China, did you actually ever think that there would be such a thing as the Chen Lab?
No. I really didn't know what, I didn't even think about going to a different country for education until probably the third year in college. Yeah. And at that time, I didn't even know what it's like to do science.
So I sometimes ask some of the female scientists if they found it difficult to have a career, whether there's still some sort of some barriers to being a woman in science and so on. What's been your experience, first of all, in China and then here?
From my own perspective, I don't feel any difficulties.
Right.
I think in China, you know, I guess just at least for the environment I grew up, I didn't really feel any difference between female versus male in terms of getting education. Yeah. After that, after I moved here, I think it's the same thing, and especially these days, especially in biology, there are probably more female PhD students and postdocs than male, or at least the same. So I never feel like, you know, we're disadvantaged. But I do hear some female friends saying maybe they're reconsidering whether they want to stay in science because of family reasons. So they may want to start a family and
right.
then spend more time with kids. That's the only concern. Other than that, I don't really see any disadvantage.
What about the problems with the economy at this point? I've spoken to some young investigators and postdocs, and they're a little bit nervous about whether we're going to see a lost generation of scientists here because of the funding story.
Sure.
Are you concerned or?
Yes, honestly, I have to say I am. I just started my lab over a year ago, and I'm actually just submitted my first R1 application.
Right.
And in the meeting, I talked to David from NIA, and sounds like right now the cutoff line is 8%. That's strikingly low.
Yes.
So yes, I am very nervous right now, honestly.
Is this something that might send you back to China?
I think no matter how hard it is, and as long as you're good, you can always find a way to to get more funding, get more support. It's hard. It just means we have to work even harder.
Yeah. Okay, well, I know that we're expecting a new snowstorm, and for that reason, Lenny Guarantee wants to get on a plane. And you're going to be traveling, so thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Let's catch up with you next time we see you. We're up in Berkeley.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.